Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. I'm Jeannie Rice, your co-host. We also have co-hosts Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Bichette. We will share with you the wisdom of the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We offer tools and support 5 days a week. We will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love, in Aramaic, Brachma. Michael is the author of the book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information about the forgiveness process, please visit www.whyagain.org. And now, welcome to the show, Mind Shifters Radio.
Hello and welcome to Mind Shifters Radio. I'm Tim Hayes. I'm your host for the first hour, and today is Monday, May 24th, 2021. As always, we are grateful to those joining us here today as we spend another couple of hours teaching and supporting people in using some of the most powerful, effective, efficient, and accessible tools I've ever encountered. Accessible because these tools are available absolutely free at the website whyagain.org. If you go to that website and click on the red and white bullseye or the link in the upper left-hand corner of most pages that says Start Here, it'll take you to a page where you can download and read Chapter 24 of Dr. Michael Rice's book. The book is titled Why Is This Happening to Me Again? And that chapter of that book contains a narrative description of the primary tool in this work, the Reality Management Worksheet, sometimes called the Reality Management Wake-Up Sheet. And it's a tool I've been using to great effect for over 16 years to improve the quality of my life and relationships, manage my emotions, and turn any negative emotional state into part of the infallible guidance system that each of us has been given. If you go to that page after you've downloaded, or before you downloaded and read Chapter 24, you can also download the actual worksheet process itself. It's a simple PDF file. You click and download, print it off, and use it as often as you'd like. You can also go to the App Store of your choice and type in the three words Heartland Aramaic Forgiveness and get access to a completely free and private app that contains the Reality Management Worksheet, an abbreviated version of that worksheet process, and a copy of the Dragon Klingon game, which is a wonderful way to introduce these tools to even younger audiences. You can also download from that webpage a host of audio files of shows just like this one where people have been stepped through the worksheet process or called in to give powerful testimonials about how the active use of that tool has improved their lives. Or we've had some rather in-depth discussions over the past 10-plus years of the dynamics behind the power in that tool. We're also doing the Course in Miracles experiments this year in this show, today being the 144th day of the year. We would normally do Lesson 144, but I'm going to go back since they're very brief and review Saturday's lessons, where the review of Lesson 123 and 124, they say, we begin this review period with the phrase, my mind holds only what I think with God or with the Creator. Lesson 123's review is, I thank my Father for his gifts to me. Lesson 124, let me remember I am one with the Creator. Yesterday's lessons, 143, begin with, my mind holds only what I think with the Creator. And then Lesson 125, in quiet, I receive God's word today. 126, all that I give is given to myself. This is helping us remember we are all connected. Lesson 144, today's review, begins with, again, the thought, my mind holds only what I think with love, with the Creator, with God. And Lesson 127's review is, there is no love but loves. There is no love but creations. Well, Lesson 128, the world I see holds nothing I want. And Pam Grout's book, Course in Miracles Experiment, Lesson 144 is, just beyond the story. She quotes Michael Gungor, who says, yesterday and tomorrow are just wounds and stories. She says, only love is real. This is all there is. My illusions hold nothing I want. Pam writes, by relying on an inventory learned from my family, culture, and past, I miss the teeming energy available in the atomic now. There is great substance within each present moment, just waiting to explode with goodness, and magic and blessings. But by reapplying old, often inappropriate cultural paradigms, I miss the magic. I completely overlook all of the life-empowering data that's trying to stream to me from my inner non-physical self. This traps me in a web of defensive, limiting perceptions. Anytime I'm not in the present moment, that tape loop kicks in and old constrictions and perceptual habits take over. They're infecting my thinking, my actions, and my beliefs. They're also a son of a gun when attempting to be happy or manifest my dreams. None of these habits of thought are true, but because they're buried for the most part, living in my subconscious like rats in the cellar, they subtly play out in my life experience any time I am not, quote, in the now, close quote. My friend Jay calls them BS, belief systems, full of that other kind of BS. Unfortunately, these are the programs I often use to explain, identify, and cope with my life. They run most of the time, even when I'm affirming and intending other things. They always feature me as a separate entity and a separate body that by their very nature are slated for the chopping block. Can we agree these masks and costumes are not our fullest, most eternal selves? That's Pam's view of Lesson 144, a review of Lesson 127 and 128. My mind holds only what I think with God, the Creator, and love. There is no love but the Creator's. The world I see holds nothing I want. So that's our Course in Miracles lesson in review for today. And we have 50 minutes left. Time for conversation. 563-999-3581 is our number. If you call that number and press 1, we can have a conversation. So what's on your mind today? What might we help you with? How has your weekend been? I had a weekend of doing some of my own personal work related to the triggering that happened on Thursday night during the support group that I mentioned in the show on Friday. And what happened in the support group was we were playing a video of a talk between Gabor Mate and Adyashanti. And Adyashanti was asking, or Gabor was asking Adyashanti about stories from very, very high-level Buddhist teachers that it was later revealed they were either having sex with their community members or followers, or they were sexually molesting those followers. And my response was to feel kind of a nausea-inducing rage. And so I knew instantly, okay, this is mine. I brought this in here. It can't get triggered by words, sounds, vibrations through a speaker. It's my meaning for this. And I know some of the things we teach, one of the things that is in the bottom line observations list that I hand out to people in the first or second session says I'll never be upset by anything anybody else ever says or does or doesn't do that I think they should. Unless, of course, I'm still judging myself negatively for doing the same or similar thing. And so I instantly did a breathing session or two and turned inside and asked, so where is it that I might have been inappropriate, whether it's sexually or otherwise, saying one thing and doing another? I threw it wide open, and I recalled hearing of, when I was 14 or 15, hearing of a peeping Tom that was, you know, peeking in the window of one of the attractive teenagers in the town I lived in, and I remembered having the thought, oh, I wish I had been there. Wish I could have seen that. So I did a worksheet or two on that, and one of the things that came up when I did a worksheet or two on the upset, hearing about these spiritual teachers that were basically saying one thing and doing another, I flashed back to several memories of being in a Catholic school with and basically surrounded by. We were constantly under the, whatever you call it, guidance, tutelage, supervision of nuns. And on a regular basis, they would walk around with scowls on their faces and a wooden ruler with a metal edge and look for any excuse to whack us on the knuckles or hit us in the back of the head. And that series of memories came up when I was processing the nausea-inducing anger at hearing that some Buddhist teachers were sexually molesting their students. So I did several of those worksheets and realized that I was holding lots and lots of hurt underneath that anger, and I didn't feel safe. I was being sent from a loving home into a school that was supposed to be a high-quality school, and yet we were supervised by and surrounded by people who talked a lot about love and about Jesus and all of the religious stuff, but they practiced anger and bitterness and violence. So I am in far better shape today than I was Thursday or Friday, having done some of that processing and having seen where some of the sadness and pain that underlied the anger, where they came from. And on my plans for, you know, checking it out, I haven't done it yet, but I will do so sometime this week, is I will review that segment of the talk with Gabor and Adyashanti and see if listening to that same litany of abuses and the teachers involved, if that produces the same level of anger as it did before. So that's just an example of how this work in my 16-plus years of experience in doing it, continues to help me live a more joyful, a more gratitude-based, a more productive life. And it truly helps me use my negative emotional states as part of a guidance system. Because, you know, prior to Thursday night support group, if you had asked me, how are you doing with all of that trauma that you sustained in grade school and high school, I would have said, pretty well. I'm pretty much cleared up. I'm no longer holding a lot of bitterness and resentment for the religious instruction, and I'm able to have some level of gratitude for the quality of the education. If you had asked me prior to Thursday support group, I wouldn't have said, well, I'm still carrying a lot of trauma from, you know, having been constantly vigilant every time there was a nun around that I might get hit. And often for doing something I had no idea was unacceptable, right? I mean, I would frequently, living in that hypervigilance, living in that fear of doing something wrong, I clearly downloaded a lot of negative energies and beliefs about myself, that I don't understand things, that I don't get things right, that I have to constantly keep trying. And the more I have events like this where something happens on the outside and I interpret it in a way that resonates that upset, it gives me yet another opportunity to go in and unload and dismantle some of those false beliefs about myself and some of the traumatic energies. So, do you have a similar story? Do you have an area where you're stuck or triggered? 563-999-3581. If you call that number and press 1, we can have a conversation. Or do you have a comment or question about this weekend's Course in Miracles lessons? Is there anything about this process that, as you review it or try to do it for yourself, you find frustrating or you want to give a testimonial about the application of these tools? I was just working with somebody prior to the session that we'll talk about in a minute. Welcome, Susan.
Hi, Tim. Dr. Tim. This topic is the fact that you needed to go somewhere else in a different area of your life, which to my mind didn't directly connect, shows you how effective the tools can be and how a trigger can, you can be led to the truth of what you need to face, even with an approximate trigger. Now, this trigger might not have seemed approximate to you. Okay, I'm going to go backtrack. I have so many thoughts that they're all coming out in an unintelligible pile. I have a sister-in-law, Tim's youngest sister, who joined a religious organization, and she had a guru. And it turns out after the guru had died, it was discovered that he had done the same with many of his students. One of the women who worked most closely with him, who was given a fantastic title and went on the trips all around the world with him, has written a book about the fact that she was used by him, and yet she was always confused because he would do what he wanted to do with her, and then he would do it in a very impersonal way, and justify it as being part of the release he needed as a spiritual director or some crazy thing. And she was in love with him, which is often the case of students who admire their teacher very much, and they're vulnerable. It happens in universities too, and I had a professor who I was involved with in that way when I was a freshman at college. I thought he was the most amazing man, and he thought I was amazing in a different way, and there's that story. But I've never looked upon that as the kind of, maybe I haven't faced it, the heavy trigger that yours was for you. But I remember someone telling me that oftentimes when a person is in very high positions, very much admired, maybe public, very powerful, there are often these stories of a hypersexuality that occurs. It's almost like it's part of the charism, or it's an inflated ego that the person thinks they have a right to do things that under other conditions they wouldn't do. And in the case of my sister-in-law, we asked her, were you ever one of those that he approached? And she said, no, and I think I know why. Because I was from a wealthy family and a prominent family. Tim's father was a congressman in Washington for years, and it was a well-known Connecticut family, and they had money, and they were supporting this teacher of my sister-in-law. And so he didn't, I suppose he figured she was just totally off limits, or maybe she wasn't attractive to him or something. But you're talking about something that happens a lot, where there's an imbalance of perceived power. And it often happens with people in the religious life. And I've been
and what I'm talking about with it is what I was able to recognize got stirred up in me as a negative emotional response, and what I could do about it with these tools.
Yeah.
I'm not talking about it from the global perspective, or this happens a lot, or and when you're saying perhaps it is a hypersexualization, or perhaps it is this, or perhaps it is that, I don't know what drives that in people. I know that as a general rule, only people who are hurt go out and hurt other people. So the assumption would have to be that in one way or another, these are people who don't feel good enough in and of themselves. They don't know, as the Way of Mastery would call us, to understand about them. They don't see their perfect innocence and their tremendous ability to achieve whatever they need to achieve without hurting anyone else. So, you know, rather than speculate about what's causing all of that, for this show, for these purposes, I'd rather stick to, okay, does that trigger you when that happens? And what gets triggered in you when that happens? Because as we know, and the Course in Miracles would tell us over and over again, whenever you're healed, you're not healed alone.
Mm-hmm.
So if you have an upset that comes up when you hear a story like this, the most productive thing you can do is apply the tool, or whatever tools work for you, whether it's Ho'oponopono or Byron Katie's, you know, questions, or even, you know, I'm going to be interviewing Diedrich later today. He has a 6-step forgiveness choose again process. So if I'm doing something that's hurting someone else, there's immediate evidence that I don't feel whole and complete, that I'm not consciously aware of my true nature as love and acting from that. And so what can I do to restore that awareness? What can I do to question any old negative beliefs? What can I do to heal from within myself? which is the most I can do for anyone else.
That's good, and I get it. And I will get off the subject because you're absolutely right. You've always said, I'm a practical person and these are practical tools. And it's true. And so I did get off on that. And I'm not aware of being triggered the way you were. But I was, it just, what you went through led to a lot of speculating on my part. And I can certainly leave off that and get on to a couple of other questions I have.
All right. What would that be?
Okay. In the lesson, my mind holds only what I think with God. The word hold, I've been thinking about hold. My mind doesn't seem to hold what I think with God. My mind is doing a lot of holding about things that are not healthy or helpful or of God at all. So I wondered if you had another word for hold.
Well, in the first place, I would say this teaching that's through all of these lessons in the Course in Miracles, these recent ones, is that it's trying to teach us about the true nature of ourselves, not our conscious, logical, or egoic nature. Right? So yes, I might have all kinds of thoughts, but when they are thoughts based in illusion, they're not real. And that's what so much of the Course is trying to help us understand. It's true at a certain level of consciousness, because my egoic consciousness can believe that I'm a sinner and I'm damaged and broken and unlovable. And that that belief doesn't make it true.
Okay.
It does make my experience based in that. So I would use the word contain or contains in exchange for hold. So the truth of my mind is that it only contains the thoughts of the Creator in truth. This, I keep coming back to this, The Impersonal Life by Joseph S. Benner, and one particular segment in there where it says, no human being has had an actual thought until after that human being awakens to the presence of the divine mind within him or her. Because prior to that, it's all of this conditioned stimulus response business. It's all of what Michael Rice would call this reflexive decision process. It's what's been conditioned in. It's not creative thought. It's not true thinking. And the Impersonal Life with Joseph S. Benner carries the same message. So those two kinds of, you know, softening or broadening of those definitions are what I would offer. This is not talking about the racing thoughts, the monkey mind, in the bounce around in me. This is talking about the true power of creative thought that comes from being aligned with the one mind.
That's good. I understand.
And understanding that when I do that, the world I see through my eyes holds nothing that I want. And I become aware of what I want and what will fulfill me and what will bring joy at these deeper levels when I'm aligned with the one mind.
And you've gone right on to my second question, which was, the world I see holds nothing that I want, which you just cleared up. So they were practically the same question, I guess, but I'm just going to say that I read an article the other day about some of the more common reactions that people have been reporting in, having had a year of being shut down in various ways, you know, limited in their travel and so forth. And that is that they don't want to do anything. They've lost interest in things they were formerly interested in. And so I read that to say, yeah, the world I see holds nothing that I want. On a bad day, I'll think, I don't want to do anything. And yet I certainly don't want to lie around and deal with my brain the way it is. So I get up and I do, thank God, there are mundane, easy, not unpleasant chores to do. But so you've said again that that isn't what this means, that the world I see holds nothing that I want because it isn't really real anyway. I'm looking at illusions. I'm looking at a made-up world. And I don't really want that, ultimately, but I don't know that I don't want it until I've had some level of enlightenment or something.
Yeah, well, yeah. Introduction to the question, you know, introduction to the understanding that my perception is just this best guess of my senses trying to, mm-hmm. you know, figure out what's really out there. What is the world? And, you know, that lesson, what is the world, that Michael Rice summarizes from A Course in Miracles, is one of the more powerful lessons because, you know, it expands, The Course in Miracles expands to a great degree on what you can get a short version of if you search for a Neil Seth video.
Yeah.
A-N-I-L, second name, last name, S-E-T-H. If you search on YouTube for a Neil Seth and just put in, you know, hallucination of reality or perception.
Right.
Then you have, you know, what modern science is telling us about what the Course in Miracles has been trying to get us to comprehend. We think mm-hmm. that when we look out through our body's eyes, we see the world that's out there. When in truth, all that's happening is this, Michael would call it the carbon-based memory, the brain in our head and our conditioned experiences, our past combines with the current stimulation and our interpretation of it to create a picture or a series of pictures mm-hmm. and a belief and a series of conclusions. And so we are not at any given point in time with our physical eyes seeing the truth of what's out there. We're seeing the tiny sliver of what exists in the light spectrum that we call the visible spectrum, because that's the part that's able to be captured by our eyes. But, you know, there are insects that see more. There are other mammals that see more with their eyes. There are birds that see more with their eyes than humans do. We miss all of that, right? And we train ourselves to believe that we know what's going on based on what we interpret from our senses without ever really slowing down to realize, wait a minute, our senses are just a tiny slice of the truth of what's happening in the world and all of the various energies that are out there. And then, given that, we say, oh, well, maybe I don't know. But then on top of that, we have to place everything about our past conditioning, culture, family, et cetera, that has been training us to make sense in one way or another of whatever it is that hits our senses. And that's a powerful set of interpretations, way, way more powerful than we ever realized. And that's constructing our experience of life.
And we get reinforced because it appears that we all share, if I say, look at that big tree, everybody who walks down my street is going to say, oh, yeah, there's the big tree. We all are kind of reinforcing the seeing of something that we think we see, but we may not be seeing it, but we all agree on what it is. And so we're just thrown back into the illusory world over and over and over again. I listened to Anil Seth's talk a couple of times. I got the gist of what he was saying, but there was stuff in it that I didn't understand. And now I'm beginning to think I ought to listen and listen and listen until I get it, although I didn't think I would ever have the brain cells to understand some of the things he was saying. And he spoke fast. Maybe I could stop it and start it. Or maybe I do get it. I don't know. But anyway, thanks for mentioning it, because I haven't gone back to it in a long time.
Well, and then there are some conclusions at the end that he makes that, you know, are, to my mind, they're quite a jump. I don't know how he got those conclusions, right?
But I remember one of them. What were the others? Do you remember more than what, the one I remember, which is there is nothing to be afraid of? I remember saying, yay! But I didn't understand how he got there from what he was saying.
Yeah, and it was that, and there was something else that I don't recall it right now exactly what it was, but I remember, you know, every time I listened to it, I thought, yeah, that's quite a stretch. That's quite a jump. I don't know how he got there from the material he was presenting, but to him it made perfect sense. And to my mind, it's just another wonderful example of how we're all just making sense of this stuff in our own way,
mm-hmm.
right? What does it mean when someone says you're beautiful? I have a fabulous example of this. I was working with a woman who, you know, is by all accounts, right? Just she's not horribly scarred, you know, in her skin. Her body is pleasantly shaped according to our current cultural standards. She's well taken care of, clean, dresses well, likes to coordinate the colors of her clothes, does her nails and her hair, all this stuff, right? All these things that you would say she's attractive. But she's had in her past episodes of abuse and trauma. And so she doesn't think so highly of herself at a core level. And so she was out, and she had a daughter that was, you know, 7 or 8 years old, and they were walking into a store through a parking lot, and a gentleman, I have no idea what this person looked like or roughly how old he was, but said, you know, whistled or said, you know, looking good or something like that, and the mother recoiled.
Mm-hmm.
In horror and anger.
Mm-hmm.
But the mother, you know, is a very consciously aware person, and so she started talking to her daughter about it, since she knows her daughter was there and heard this guy. And so she said, did you hear what that person said? And the daughter said, yes. And the mother said, so what do you think he meant by that? You know, do you think that was rude? Or do you think? And the daughter just said, I just think he thinks you look beautiful.
Mm.
So the daughter's interpretation was just as pure and innocent as could be. And the mother's interpretation was filtered by, you know, having seen somebody expose himself to her out in public before when she was, you know, a teenager, and probably some questionable dating situations and a stalker in her past and stuff like that. So the mother's interpretation of this simple comment by a stranger was very negative. And her daughter was just, oh, I think he thinks you look beautiful. Because, of course, in the daughter's eyes, the mother is beautiful.
Mm.
And it's wonderful that this person sees mom as beautiful, too. Well, we're all doing that kind of thing all the time, whether we realize it or not. The distortions that I was putting on this commentary from Thursday night's group are a wonderful example of it. It had almost nothing to do with the truth that there have been spiritual teachers who hide behind their spirituality and use their teachings as a rationalization or a weapon. That's the truth. But But that's been true. It's been true for thousands of years, and I don't live all day, every day with a sick feeling in the pit of my stomach and anger, even though it's always been true. Even before I was born, that was true. So if that outside event was causing the sick feeling in my stomach and the anger, I would have been feeling it from the moment of birth, and I would have felt it all the way through because the outside event has always been true. It's still true. In this very day, there are probably people who are abusing their power with, you know, with whether it's power and control or sexuality or whatever. So the outside event is clearly not what's causing the nausea in my stomach. It was the interpretation right. that I threw on this. And I was probably the only one in the support group who felt it as intensely as I did the way I did. Why? Because I'm the only one in the support group that had the history that I have and that has the judgment, negative judgment of myself, negative judgment of others, that was resonated by the interpretation I threw on that discussion. Does that make sense?
It does, and it also amazes me because to me it seemed like a fairly approximate trigger, but you put it to use. It went right in, which means in the largest sense that you were ready and God is good and gives you every chance to heal and
well,
presents opportunities.
And, okay. And life gives us that, not just me.
Mm-hmm.
Right. It isn't that the life situation did it so much as my interpretation of it, right? So there's this inner wisdom, there's this Holy Spirit within each of us, there is this infallible guidance system within each one of us that will alert us when we've got, as Michael calls it, disintegrative energy in our system that's wreaking havoc without us knowing it.
Right.
So you don't have to attribute it to an outside force. You can say, oh, when there's pain inside, the higher self wants us to become aware of it so we can dismantle it. So it isn't that the situation happened. It's that I threw the interpretation on it to alert myself to the upset I was holding.
Michael
right?
calls
so my
it
higher control. Self throws that interpretation on it to alert my egoic self. Go ahead. What were you going to say about Michael?
He talks about our levels of vitality have gotten to the point where we can be presented with that piece of work, and that previous to that, maybe we weren't vital enough to handle that. It's just another way of looking at it.
Yeah, and all I'm trying to do here is get away from the idea that there's some outside force that's manipulating the events in my life to wake me up to this or that. That it doesn't, you know, like because then you're just a step away from why did this happen, and I think it's far more productive to ask what am I doing with what happened that I can make use of. Rather than
that's
building
good.
Some scenario with my conscious logical mind that's going to try and understand the flow of life for the last 13.84 billion years that brings
yeah.
me to this moment.
Yeah, that's very good to be reminded of that. I am definitely in the habit of doing the other, and it's good to stay within the self, capital S, which has it all in there.
So is it appropriate to turn on friend Ellen?
Sure.
Her microphone, that is. Ellen, welcome.
Oh, thank you, Dr. Tim. How are you?
I'm doing well, thanks. And yourself?
Good. Hi, Susan.
Hi.
I love the conversation that you guys are having about perception and the world that we see. And I just wanted to add someone else's teaching on this, because I think, well, it's been very helpful for me. And I think I've mentioned some of this before, but I think it also bears repeating. And this is what Walter Russell came to see. And what he learned from his, like, transmissions from God are that there's two worlds, okay? And the Course talks about this too, right? There's two worlds. There's the real world, and then there's the world of illusions. And he said the real world is perfect stillness. Perfect stillness. The other world is constant motion. And of course it's the world of constant motion that is the illusory world. And he says that our body senses were made specifically to deceive us, so that we could experience the world of illusions. Because even space and time are illusions. And he said the only way that we can even, like, perceive anything at all happening is because of the illusion of space and time, and the fact that our senses were made to only see one direction. So what he says is that, like, at the same time as you have, like, let's say a forward movement, there's also a simultaneous backward movement. They happen simultaneously, which means that they don't actually happen at all. But because of time splitting them, you know, apparently, it's just an appearance, splitting the forward motion and the backward motion apart, we see, let's say, the forward motion. And we only see the forward motion because our senses only see in one direction. So I just love the way he describes this, because it makes it so clear that everything that seems to be happening is actually not happening, because it's being voided as it's happening. And I think this is why someone like Byron Katie has no problems with, you know, a typhoon wiping out a whole island of people, because she understands that nothing bad can ever happen, because in actuality, it's not even really happening. And so, you know, it's because our senses are so limited and we believe what our senses tell us that we're like, oh, no, this is wrong, this is good, this is bad. And meanwhile, it's none of those things. It's just a show, you know. But we buy into it, and then we get, you know, that's the cause of all of our suffering, is because we think that horrible things are happening. And I just wanted to give his perspective of what he calls the world of illusions, which is the world of movement.
And there's the bird, a cardinal, deciding to concur wholeheartedly with you.
Oh, isn't that interesting that it happens to be a cardinal, because I have a special relationship with cardinals.
Well, you got one chiming in on your call right now.
Yeah, yeah. And when the cardinal shows up, I know, like, I'm whatever it is I'm talking about or thinking about, it's like a confirmation. there he is.
There it is in spades.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, and of course, you know, at a certain level, that is not helpful for some people, because they're living at that very practical level. And so, you know, I have to put food on the table, and I have to keep my children from being abused by the bully or some abusive teacher, and I have to, you know, at a certain level of experience, that kind of observation isn't useful. I like to talk about how I think this might have happened in a call years ago with Susan Bingham, but the idea was if I, you know, there are all these different levels of reality going on. And if I have somebody who is, their car has broken down and they need that car to get to work so they can put food on the table and keep the mortgage paid so they can have a house for their family. And that person approaches me and says, hey, can you help me? My car's broken down. And I go into my best metaphysical, listen, buddy, it's a quantum world. And so your car and your body are made up of energy packets that pop in and out of existence. I'm not going to be very useful.
Right.
I wouldn't bring this up except for the fact that, I mean, you guys are having an in-depth discussion about this, and I thought,
that's right,
you
and I think it's relevant at that level. Exactly.
Yes.
I think it's relevant at that level. And so, you know, I would help that person with, you know, some car parts or some money or an Uber ride or whatever to help him or her get that job done. And then if they were still all kinds of woe is me and I can't believe, you know, maybe I'm taking them to their job in my car. This has happened several times to me over the years where just so happens that I live in a fairly, on a road that's a fairly main thoroughfare. And so then I'm giving the person a ride and I'm just hearing a little bit about their story. And if it's just, yep, these things happen, we'll get through it, I don't go anywhere with the story. But if they're like getting all bent out of shape and woe is me and I can't believe this is happening to me, and I might try and drop a little bigger truth on them just to say, hey, you know, that's all true that these things happen, but also isn't it great that you broke down right in front of my house and I happen to be here and I can give you a ride to work and you're there and you're not late, and you know, things are going to work out better than you could imagine. That whole kind of, you know, take a step up, level up in awareness to understand that there's more than one way to look at this situation.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's the kind of thing that I end up doing on a regular basis. When I'm able to understand the truth of what you're saying, that, you know, there's always an action and a reaction and there's always infinite possibilities and they're all kind of happening at once, which also means they're not really happening the way I think they are. So whenever I am choosing a negative interpretation of it, then I can take a breath, take a step back and ask, okay, how am I creating this negative experience? And if I want to take it to the Byron Katie level, I could say, okay, how am I choosing to believe a negative thought and therefore inducing suffering? Or if I take it to the Diedrich Wolczyk level and I say, okay, when did I feel this before? Were the origins of this emotion in me? And what are the negative beliefs about myself that I downloaded during the times when I felt this emotion most in the earliest parts of my life? When I start dismantling those false beliefs, when I start to see clearly that I'm the one creating my emotions and I don't need to keep creating the negative ones after I've discovered their roots, then my life starts to change for the better by leaps and bounds. And how could my life change for the better by leaps and bounds if I just have a recognition or a realization of what I've been doing with my thought, if life really was as solid as my thoughts tell me it is? Well, it couldn't. Right? So the truth is, life is malleable, and that my experience of life is an internal creation. And when I wake up and realize that, all kinds, an infinite number of possibilities open up for me. But until I realize that, I'm going to keep creating the belief that I'm bound by these physical experiences and these limitations of time and space, etc., and that my experience internally is created by the external events. And now it's a different bird chirping.
Yes, I'll finish. And I have a I don't know if it's a mother or a father starling is feeding a baby right here. It's like, wow, all this activity going on.
Well, any other thoughts for you today, Ellen?
No, I just wanted to share, since the whole the cardinal thing came up, I had a the reason that I say I have a special relationship with cardinals is because prior to an awakening experience that I had, I was serenaded by a cardinal. And it was so clear. It was absolutely so clear that he was singing to me. And he was in front of me, then he was to the side of me, then he was behind me. And every time I looked at him, he's staring straight at me and singing his heart out. And I was just dumbfounded. I had never had a bird sing to me like that before. And that was in the evening, and it got dark, so then I went inside, and the next morning, because it was on my back porch, I opened the window onto my back porch, and he immediately, there he was, he started singing again. And I was like, oh my God, he's still here. And then about half an hour later is when I had the experience, and I realized that he was my herald. And that, you know, it just goes to show that things are not the way that you think that they are. I mean, these things happen that we think, you know, can't possibly happen. and it was just amazing, and it was a beautiful experience, and it really caused me to look on everything differently. And so now I know whenever I start something seems out of the ordinary, just keep my eyes open, keep my mind open, something is, you know, potentially getting ready to be revealed to me.
Excellent. Well, that's a good idea for all of us to do that on a regular basis, especially when we have been prompted to interpret things in a way that gives rise to our negative emotions. So I thank you both for your comments and questions. It's lovely to hear from you both today. I'm going to mute you both so we can move on to our transition. Thank you, Susan. Thank you, Ellen. And I'll remind us all that we come from love. We're made of this stuff we call love. We actually are love, and everything else is false. Welcome, Jeannie Rice.
Thank you, Dr. Tim. Appreciate you. And thanks for letting me know about the app. I'm going to see if Susan can help me with that. I've tried to get a hold of the guys in India, and they're not responding to me. So, but I will definitely work on that one. Thank you.
All right. Blessings.
Thanks. Welcome, everybody, to the second hour of Mindshifters Radio. Today is Monday, May the 24th, 2021. And our call-in number is 563-999-3581. And press 1, and that puts you into queue to talk to us. And we'd love to hear your comments and questions because that makes this your show. And we'll give Michael just a moment to get dialed in. And what we were talking about, Dr. Tim sent me a note this morning that on the iPhone that the app wasn't allowing him to complete the worksheet or save it. So there's a glitch there, that, and I am working on that. Anything that you find, please let me know whether it's on the website or the app so that I can get it corrected. And your participation is much appreciated. So I'll direct you to our website, which is whyagain.org, and you can click on the bullseye or the start here in the upper left corner. Both of those will take you to where you can find MP3s of radio shows where we've walked someone through doing worksheets. There are all of the worksheets for all of the workshops that we do. They're all out there for free download. Lots of information of where to begin and the PowerPoint presentation to give you a more detailed description of forgiveness. And especially if you're a visual learner, then that helps sometimes to see the PowerPoint and the little drawings. And thank you, Bill Constantino, for that. And We are still switching over. We don't have the new site live yet, but it will still be whyagain.org. We'll put it up and bring this one down at the same time, and it's got a lot of changes. It's a lot that's the same, but it's beautiful, and thank you, Susan Giles, for helping us with that and getting it switched over to WordPress. It's supposed to be offer a whole lot of opportunities that we don't have with Joomla. So we're looking forward to working with that. A little bit of learning curve there. I've been taking notes for the shows in just a notepad so that once it gets back up there that I can add the information. So the notes for all of these shows will still be added. And we appreciate you joining us. I'm going to walk in and see if Michael's having some technical difficulty or what, why he is not with us. Ask you to hold the space for my dad as we're getting some other testing and stuff done for that. And are you dialing in? Okay. So they've suggested that he's got a neurological defect that needs to be evaluated, and hopefully something can be done to assist him to improve a little bit so that the occupational therapy and those guys will continue coming back and assisting. So I ask you to hold the space for that to go well this week. We'll be taking Dad on Wednesday for one evaluation, and then they'll send him to a neurological specialist. So. All right. Michael, are you with us yet? He must be having a little bit of a challenge. There he is. Welcome, Michael.
Here he is. Thank you, dear heart. And welcome, everybody. Honored and delighted that you're here and that we get to play in this amazing conversation about opening the window for first century Aramaic forgiveness to open the window. Whatever that means. And I'll just offer that more and more I've been gathering the understanding and being given the message that our what we call the physical plane, which of course has nothing to do with physical, is just a state of organized energy according to what we are aware of and what we've been focusing on. And when we stop being hypnotized by what we're focused on, hypnotized by hostility and fear and rage and guilt and grief, there's a whole lot more getting ready to come through. But we have to be ready to receive it. We have to be available to receive it. You can't be busy with raging at some political goonery going on and be available for love to communicate what's coming forward. And so there has to be a place where we can weaken the connection, disconnect from the insanity. Doesn't mean you have to ignore it. I mean, if you ignore the insanity, survival may not happen. You know, it's good to be aware if there's a truck coming down the road and you're standing in the middle of the road. You know, it's a really good thing to be aware of. But if the fear that comes up when the truck is rolling down the road doesn't subside when you step off the road, then you're not available for what else is possible. And so it's the weakening of the energies, the survival energies of hostility or fear. You know, it's kind of like we're past the survival game on planet Earth, or at least we should be. Sadly, you know, when you think about it, there's too much survival stuff still going on. But the truth is we live in an abundant enough world. We're out of the food chain unless we're living in hostility or fear. And it's time for us to be available for downloads that take humanity in the direction that humanity is designed for. And we're designed for the embodiment, for the incarnation of the active presence of love. We're not designed to keep fighting and struggling the same old generational battles that have been going on for a thousand generations. So applying forgiveness to the energetic patterns of past fears and hostilities allows the hypnotizing qualities of those energies of hostility or fear to be subdued. Then the faculties that we have are available for something higher. And so in a nutshell, it's like the need, and especially each time you have a deeper experience, I mean, more profound experience of being the active presence of love, being submerged, being surrounded in that presence of being, it takes a deeper level of commitment to doing one's work. Or the tendency can be to get trapped in the past dynamics. So we're looking to wake up from those past dynamics and realize who we are and what we're here for, how we really truly function. And so we're glad to be playing this game and having this conversation and move forward to the expression of who we are. We've been talking to Richard about this idea of holding a space of active present love, very short title in the book, and recognizing that as we move more toward that space of being the presence of love, we become more available, or should I say receptive, to that presence of love flowing into and through us. When that voice becomes strong enough, then it will guide us in ways that the old hostility and fear-based mind just could not do, would never do. So I offer the thought to Richard, if we allow ourselves to find, I'm on page 72 of the book, if you're following along in Why Is This Happening to Me Again? If we allow ourselves to fall into the world's ways, we cut ourselves off from love. It then feels like a void when we first attempt to return to the experience of love, as we do in this exercise. If you continue to practice over time, the experience of love will grow. So it becomes a necessity to cultivate the space of love in you, the receptivity for love in you, and to expand that experience. You know, I go back to the first deep, direct, profound experience I had of the presence of love. And that happened actually 40 years minus 3 days ago when my daughter was born. And now I'm talking about the experience of the objective presence of actual present love, not the culture's definitions, you know, where love is sexual athletics and love is self-sacrifice and love is when you, you know, let somebody walk all over you just to prove you love them. No, that's got nothing to do with love. But the actual direct experience. And for me, that was when my daughter was born, and as her head delivered into my hands, and she opened her eyes and looked me square in the eye, crystal clear eyes, totally focused in mine, and she grinned at me. That is one of the most transformative moments of my life. When we allow ourselves to have those transformative moments, and then we spend time cultivating relationship with that, realizing that that is who we are, then more and more we become available to be guided, to be directed by that presence of love that we are. So then my instruction goes on with Richard, once you feel love, imagine yourself intensifying it until it fills every cell of your body. So we're doing a love exchange exercise with him. We've instructed him sitting face to face. One person has eyes closed. The other person goes inside, finds the deepest, clearest love that they can. And when they're ready, when they're tapped into it, opens their eyes and then directs that energy of love through their eyes to the person sitting in front of them. You can do this with yourself in the mirror. So then open your eyes and imagine extending that love out through your eyes to someone or to some situation in your world. Another step is to enfold yourself in that love, and when possible, look in the mirror as you do. Invest some time in this exercise, and soon you will find conscious, active, present love will become a part of your vocabulary and your life. Meditation, and I'm just going to invite everybody who's listening right now to close your eyes for a moment. If you don't have in your repertoire of experience that presence of love, then I'll invite you to borrow my experience. Imagine that you're there as Krista is being born. Her head delivers into your hands, and you are touched by the most awesome, transformative, sweetest energy you've ever imagined. Let that strengthen in you. And then allow yourself to simply focus and send that energy literally to everyone who's connected with this call right now. Now, your mind might say, well, I can't do that. I don't even know who's connected with this call. Well, guess what? In your higher faculties, as an energetic being, you don't have to know. Most of the rules that our minds have made up about how energy works and how everything works are simply blown away when you step into the truth of who you are. And so allow yourself to imagine sending that love to every person who's listening to the show right now. I don't know if Bob's on down in Australia. Julie's off and on. Susan's usually here. Lisa. And breathe. Imagine yourself in a mirror and that energy is bouncing back to you. Notice how your physiology softens and relaxes as you tap into that presence of love. If you live in what the world calls an uptight state, you live in a sympathetic dominant state. The sympathetic nervous system is active. It's on guard. It's ready to fight or run. Freeze. And so just let yourself breathe into and allow everything inside of you to soften and become receptive to that presence of love. And allow yourself every day to cultivate your relationship with this presence of love. As you do, you will transform everything in your life. And if you listen to that word transform, it means trans is to go across form, to go across the form, to go past the appearance of things, the form that things have taken, and recognize that this thing that we call life has been working to develop instruments or vehicles to express its highest capabilities. You know, if you look at an ant has a certain ability to express capabilities. Some of them are pretty amazing. If you stood the ant in front of Michelangelo's David, would the ant say, wow, what a sculpture? No. No ability to express that. If the development of life had stopped at the ant, we wouldn't be here doing what we're doing now. If the development of life stops with you now where you are, then what's waiting to come through will not become manifest in the world, will not become available, will not come into expression in the world. And so breathe into that presence of love. And recognize that it is ready and available to mold you for the next level of the expression of your life. And it's beyond anything you've ever imagined, if you'll simply allow it. And then recognize that you can consciously, purposely participate in being available. And that's what the tools are about. That's what forgiveness is about. That's what responsibility communication is about. That's what the power person worksheet, that's what the codependence worksheet is about. That's what the purpose, personal power, and commitment worksheet is about. That's what the commitment itself is about. Each of the tools is a tool for learning how to become more available to be and bring about the direction of the expression of love. Remember the first time you held a newborn child, and go back and tap into the essence of that newborn. And notice that when you use the word love in relationship to the newborn, you're not describing something the newborn is doing. You're describing what the newborn is. Now, if you listen to the world, if you listen to many family systems, you might come to believe that life is about learning how to protect yourself, defend yourself, attack, win, take, gain. And all of that's a lie. Life isn't about any of that. Now, that doesn't mean don't enjoy any of that while it's there. It just means don't make that the end all and the be all, because there's a whole lot more getting ready to come through if you're available to it. Like, this is just the beginning. You know, it's like we're almost out of survival mode now. And that means we're getting ready for downloads that will teach us to go so far beyond what humanity is doing now that life is not even going to resemble what it looks like today. But if you're too busy doing what you're doing today, you're not available. Forgiveness is a way to make yourself available. And so that's what we're here to support, being available to be the expression of the active presence of love. Being available for something more than conflict, more than gathering stuff. We're here to become available to be expressions of and the hands and feet for the presence of love in the world. And so I breathe with you, sending that active present love in your direction and willingly receiving its return as we strengthen that space and that experience in each other. And honored to have you being part of the team that is engaged in this conversation. And so, Miss Jeannie, do we have anybody in the phone queue with a hand up or anything happening in the chat room?
No, it is quiet in both places. So if someone presses one, you're first in line. We have 39 minutes. We have plenty of time.
Lots of time for conversation, yes. So how can we support you? What's happening in your world? If you're out there in listener land, the idea here, you know, if I were in your hometown, if I were, you know, at your local library doing a presentation, or your local university, or maybe your local prison, your local church, if I had just shared what I've shared in the last 20 minutes as I stepped off of the platform and walked down into the room, what would your question be? Would you walk over and say, Michael, I just have a quick question about that sending love thing, or that being the experience of love, or being available to love, or what does it mean there's something else getting ready to come through?
We have a hand up.
Let's say hello.
Area code 610. I believe it's Miss Susan.
Hello. Hi.
Well, welcome, first young off, lady.
Hi, guys. So you've got, I do have a question, but I just want to say your journey with your dad, Jeannie, this is just so wonderful that you're doing that. And I know it is probably really hard, but that's, I don't want to put that idea in your mind. It sounds like a lot of challenges.
Yeah, it has been, and you know, given me opportunities to breathe and be open to learning whatever it is I'm supposed to learn this time.
Right.
Well, there's been a lot of forgiveness done around what's happening for Dad, too. It's been an opportunity for both of us in that regard, and to just really be in the space of being here as love for him.
Wonderful that you are doing that and can do that.
We are blessed.
And it sounds as if you really are in that, you're able to maintain that active present love, which, boy, I've experienced it, but it's been blinking out lately. And I was reminded by a sister-in-law, a cousin or something, it's a long conversation. Thanks to the COVID shutdowns and Zoom, I've gotten to know two cousins very well. And these are
right.
people that I may never have known before. And we've been talking about their mother, my first cousin, who goes into very dark moods, according to the daughters. And the daughters have started talking to this with their mother, and their mother insists that she's very private. It's none of their business. And she uses prayer, and she's healing herself as she goes, and to mind your own business, basically. Meanwhile, the daughters have been reared in a family where the mother went into these moods, and the darkness seemed very great, and it frightened the girls, and they are processing, and they want to process with their mother. They were very close to their mother and also afraid of her, which sounds like my whole family dynamic on that side has to do with mothers who we want to heal and comfort, and we are afraid of at the same time. So you can imagine the depth of the dialogue, and one of those sisters has been on the Zoom. She's zoomed out and is dropping out, but we are continuing the discussions, which include the tools a lot. One thing she brought up yesterday, and here comes my question finally, is she said, do you know about Eckhart Tolle and the pain body? And I said, yeah, I've always thought I had a big one, just waiting in the wings, and, you know, I chip away at it with the tools, but when it steps in and starts working its wonders, I struggle, and I know Michael has said things about the pain body, and that's what I'm asking you, Michael. Go over it again, would you? What you do with that idea of the pain body.
Well, my offering around that would be that let's use an analogy, because there's no way to speak to it directly.
Okay.
I have a blueprint for a new home I'm going to build. And I have materials that I've ordered. I've got shingles over here. I've got doors. I've got windows. I've got bricks. I've got blocks. I've got siding. I've got flooring. I've got wires. And I have gallons and gallons and gallons of dark paint, black paint.
Yeah.
So I'm going to build this building. And not knowing any better, I open this paint, or I'm going on a trip, and I tell somebody to just take the paint that's over in the corner and paint all the rooms in the house, and I come back home, and all the rooms are painted black.
Yeah.
So I've just described the application of an energy that I really don't want in all the rooms in my house, but it's there.
Mm-hmm.
What am I going to do? I'm going to start to clean this energy up and replace it with what I want to have in those rooms.
Right.
So in one room I want, you know, it's going to be the baby's room, and the baby's a boy, and so I'm going to make it pink or blue. And, you know, what am I going to do with each room? And there's work to be done to clean it up, to
mm-hmm.
make it available for the light. If
mm-hmm.
generationally we've had this pain body, if we've had these thought disorders that cause pain, and we've applied them to our cells, then our cells are filled with, stuffed with this energy that creates pain in the cell.
Mm-hmm.
And what we could call the pain body is just a reflection of the presence of building blocks called thoughts that don't belong in a human cell.
Mm-hmm.
Thought disorders.
Yeah.
And so the forgiveness process is the application. And you know, if this has been going on for 100 generations in the bloodline, I mean, who knows where that kind of thing starts and where it ends? Well, it ends when somebody says, I'm going to wake up and I'm going to do my work and I'm going to clean this up in me.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to clean it up generationally. And I'm going to recognize that I am both the recipient of these thought disorders and the giver of these thought disorders, if I'm in the bloodline.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to take responsibility for them and change them. Apply forgiveness. And so the application of forgiveness becomes key in removing the thought disorders that create warning signals called pain, that these thoughts don't belong in my structure or in my life. And every time I engage in them, I'm going to experience some kind of pain. I'm going to go into that dark place. Well, if I'm in that dark place, it's time for me to acquire some tools, begin to explore my mind, and remove what never belonged. And what is it that didn't belong? It's any form of hostility or fear. And I'm going to begin to simultaneously make room for, spend time contemplating those things that are key to and based in love, the love exchange. So we've got two sides of the same coin. One side of it is the cultivating of conscious, active, present love, the engagement in that presence of love. And the other is the application of forgiveness for when the reflection of the condition of my cells holding darkness, when I say my mind is going into a dark place. And I'm going to start to awaken from that dark place by forgiving. You know, Paul, I think it was, it said, be transformed by the renewal of your mind. It's a renewal process. And it's the removal of the thought disorders that remove the pain body. And pain is just a signal. It's a very friendly thing. It's just a device that's designed to make our ears grow, to get us to pay attention. And clean up our minds, clean up our thought disorders.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a friend, but it can be pretty hurtful. And people get lost in the hurt, and because they have no tools, you know, you've heard me read that section from the front of Why Is This Happening to Me Again, of life without tools is hell. When people have no idea that they can take charge of these things, that there are ways to dump and remove those dark energies, and that we can be renewed by cultivating the relationship with active present love and bringing that active present love in. And if we live in a community of people where everybody's cells are painted with darkness, it's going to be a challenge to find somebody who can hold the light and say, by the way, have a look over here. There's something different going on.
Mm.
And to me, one of the reasons for this radio show, you know, there's that section of the course you've heard me refer to several times over the years, where it says it would be strange if you were asked to give up all symbols of the world a while, recognizing that words and thoughts are symbols. So if you give up all symbols of the world a while, but we're asked to take a teaching function where you're required to use the symbols of the world, but the course goes on to say, be you not deceived by them as well. They stand for nothing. Mm-hmm. These thoughts based in darkness, basically at this point, are pretty much running the world, and they mean nothing. They're nothing but a distraction from what we're really here for, a distraction from the expression of the light. And yet people build lives around it and think this is what life is about, and it means nothing. Does that make sense in your question?
It does, and I'm breathing and breathing and breathing because I've
gone
into this.
Well, then I'll breathe with you.
Thank you. One thing I love
remembering. I've gone into
this. It's not a good place right now. And one thing I love about having come out of it using the tools for periods, longer and longer periods of time, is that I tell myself, this is just momentary. Don't worry. I mean, this is just not going to last. Remember how you felt 2 days ago? Remember how it was last week? And I use
exactly.
that as a tool to make
That's
this small
tool.
And contained. Yeah, it is. It's very helpful.
Yep.
And you have talked about symptoms of healing, and I'm telling you, they're all accurate. Depression, belly problems, you know, the whole, every time I go through another cycle, I get the whole array. And I can tell myself these are healing symptoms of healing. Hang on, don't worry, remember this, remember that. And that's very helpful. However, I even thought I wouldn't call today because in a way I'm asking you to help me out and I want to be able to do it using the tools, but I'm talking to you. So anyway, there you are.
Well, you know,
there's
nothing like a little help. There's nothing like a little help from our friends, and that's what we're here for. We're not here to say,
well,
here's a bag of tools. Go do this by yourself.
Yeah.
You know? Otherwise, we'd publish a book, put it out there, and disappear.
Yeah.
But that's not the idea. No, I'm here to support mm-hmm. you in unwinding, you know, as the Course says, to proclaim the unreality of the insane thoughts and to keep showing how they're, you know, the Course talks about, yeah, you're going to go back and you're going to use the words that the world of darkness rules, but you only use those words to proclaim their unreality.
Mm.
And yes, in the world of darkness, those words still have meaning, but once you start to pass it, those words have no meaning. They're just silliness. Those thought disorders are silliness, but not to somebody who's locked in the middle of one.
Right.
Once it's given up, it's like, well, who would ever go back there again? Well, nobody would. But if you don't know any better, and that's been the thrust of the family system or the culture, and, you know, let's face it, this whole culture has been, you know, I mean, the last 70 years we've killed 150 or 170 million people in war on the planet. I mean, that's some pretty dark thoughts.
Mm-hmm. It is.
And who hasn't been touched by it? Who hasn't been touched by it? You look at the fact that, you know, today there are probably more refugees in the world than maybe have ever been. Refugees from war, refugees from, you know, I mean, you look at, we say, oh, we had to get even with those people who did that terrible 9/11 thing and killed 3,000 people. Well, you know, it's been well proven that the Iraqis had nothing whatsoever to do with it. We've killed over 1.5 million of them. 1.5 million Iraqis are dead as a result of 9/11, and they weren't even involved. What has run the insanity of the culture? And to remove the thought disorders that have led to that, the fear, the rage, the guilt, the pain, the trauma, and to restore light to those places in our minds and every mind on the planet, is it's a big task. It's a job.
Yeah.
And, of course, to spend time cultivating direct relationship with the presence of the mind of love is such a key.
It feels so grassroots and small, and yet I see evidence. I mean, if I talk about my immediate life, it is wonderful. And I go for a walk in the park, and everyone's down there walking their dog, and there's such love between people. I see the evidence of it, but I have... I keep coming back to the problems of the world and kind of painting more black paint on the house. You know, I think what you're saying is we can know it's there and we can do what we can, but if we are in it, we're not a help. And if we do the tools and can be in that good space, then we can be more effective. Yeah, well,
and growing into that is a constitutional growth. You know, I've used the example you may or may not have heard me use before, but pardon me. Imagine we've got a newborn baby in a baby carriage, and we're walking down the side of the road or the sidewalk, and I park the baby carriage, and I turn to talk to a neighbor. It's at the top of a hill. And somebody comes along and parks a car beside the carriage at the top of the hill, gets out of the car and walks away, doesn't set the wheels properly against the curb, and doesn't set the parking brake. The car jumps out of neutral and rolls down the hill. It crashes at the bottom of the hill. The baby in the carriage, in response to the crash, has a startle response, but the baby has no clue what just happened.
Yeah.
A three-year-old, a child of three, stands at the side of the curb, watches the car start to roll down the hill, and knows, you know, something's not right about this. Mom or dad should be in the car, and the car shouldn't be rolling down the hill, but doesn't really understand what's going on. It's just something's not right, but I don't know what it is, and I certainly don't have a clue, nor am I capable of doing anything about it. The child at six stands at the side of the road, watches the car start to roll down, knows exactly what's wrong, knows about the brake in the car, but no possibility of catching the car that's rolling down the hill and the car crashes. The child at 12 knows where the brake is, takes off in a sprint, but just doesn't have leg muscles strong enough to catch the car before it reaches the bottom of the hill and crashes. The kid at 18 sprints, strong enough, gets the car door open, jumps in the car, hits the brake, holds his foot on the brake, and stops the crash. The person at 24 parks the car, sets the wheel, sets the emergency brake, and the car is safe. It's a constitutional growth. And so it is with the running of our mouths and the running of our thought disorders and our rage and our fear and our guilt and our pain and the generational trauma of moms passing on traumas to children and children receiving them and functioning out of them. You know, to become conscious of those things that we are unconscious of, to realize what their impact is a constitutional growth, just like the baby or the 20-year-old standing at the side of the curb.
You know, I think you hit on it with the concentrated dialogues I've had with my first cousin's daughters, and they're in their late 50s and early 60s now, and one of them said, you know, I know you're our mother's cousin. You're in her generation. She's 2 years older than I am.
Right.
But one of them said, we're talking as if you were in my generation, which to me was like this incredible compliment of saying that,
yeah,
I know we can talk to you. So the dialogues we've been having, though,
mean, there have been letters going back and forth with filled with the thought disorders of my clan. That side of the family, it's my mom and dad's side. It isn't Tim Bingham's side. It's my mom and dad's side. And in this case, my dad's, which I didn't know much about because my father was very quiet and never told us about the dysfunction of his family. But
right.
my aunt, my father's sister, was much more open with her two children, one of whom became a schizophrenic and died recently in a facility where she spent her whole life as a schizophrenic.
Hmm.
And she had terrible anxiety, terrible visions of disasters, fires, brutality. This child was a brilliant, brilliant poet. She got to Harvard and then she got sick freshman year, very obviously not able to be well enough to be at school at all. And it took only a month or two to get her committed in a place that was wonderful. And my cousin, the one who's now having these, quote, dark, dark moods, took care of that sister.
Hmm.
And there are all
wow.
kinds of other, she has endured such, I mean, I could go into it. It's just stories of alcoholism, brutality, punishment, that's similar to my dad's addiction, but much more, I had a much gentler upbringing than she did. And she is now
right.
being invited to face her demons. She's 81. I'm going on, I'll be turning 77 in a minute. So she's 81
right.
and she has a terrible fear of death and the loss of her being able to help and do for everybody except herself. So she's got this rescue, fix-it demon up the kazoo, and she's no longer capable of doing all she did. And she talks about taking her life, and her mother took her life. Her mother took her life because she smoked and drank all her life. Brilliant woman, a writer, a teacher, took her life using the hemlock potion because she had such bad emphysema and osteoporosis from having smoked and drank all her life. And
right.
now
right.
my cousin is talking about this same scenario. Years ago, she said, I would never do that. It has an effect on oneself and one's
on everybody. Yeah.
On everybody. Yep. I would not. Now she's forgotten that or is willing to own that and say, I have to do it anyway. So here she's talking this way, and her daughters, they are so eager to comfort her and help. And so we've been on this daily emails. No wonder I'm having a... This is good, Michael. Thank you for listening to all this. It's been a lot to handle, I guess, and I don't feel quite strong enough.
What was the insight that just came?
I was saying I didn't feel strong enough to handle it. I don't know about any other insight.
Okay. Well, it just felt like there was a shift in energy for you there of seeing where you've been gathering some of this energy that you're loading yourself with.
Well, I know it isn't necessary. It isn't necessary.
Well, but if it's there, it's necessary, unless it's forgiven. If it's there, it's going to play out. It's not as if anybody's got a choice about it. If it's there and something sets it into resonance, it's going to have its way. It's going to do its thing. If we've got the tools, then we can interrupt it, remove it, and change the game.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's as if I want to rush in and fix people because I can't fix myself. It's, you know.
And that desire to rush in and fix people is because I think I can't fix myself, but I can distract myself.
Absolutely, Michael.
And,
totally, totally, totally.
Yeah, and my input would be that you do know how to, quote-unquote, fix yourself. Not that you're broken, but how to remove the thought disorders that have impinged on, it sounds like, many of your family members. You know exactly how to remove them, and you've been doing an awesome job of it, and it sounds like you're facing the next level of doing it and the next level of teaching other family members to be able to do it as well. Because most of the world is totally and completely oblivious. They have no idea any of this has changed. It's like, well, this is life. That's the way it is. Mm-hmm. With no idea that it's all changeable.
Yeah. Well, I think with my cousin, who is 81, her terrible fear, as I told you, is incapacity, uselessness, and then death. And my worst fear, as I've said many times on the show, is to die and never know consciousness again, to be absolutely obliterated, is even a word in the Book of Common Prayer. Never let me be, and let me not be confounded. Maybe I don't understand that, but I took that to mean the, oh my God, there's nothing here after my body dies. That's being confounded, and that is my worst fear. And I still have that fear, even after all the work we've done. There it is, staring me in the face again.
So it sounds like you're getting ready to handle the next level of your fear and your mistrust of creation and of the Creator.
I'm writing
this down. But remember,
Paul.
Remember, Paul talks about, you know, whether in or out of the body, I knew not, for I saw things which I could not utter.
Yeah, I love that.
There's plenty else going on after the body collapses.
That's
and
the other thing, Michael,
what
I
you
think.
Want to do is go there consciously.
So, okay, go to where the body is no longer alive, go there consciously.
Well, wait, no. That's not what I'm suggesting. I'm saying to enter into the practice and cultivate the relationship with the eternal aspect of you called love, do that consciously so that if the body drops, you still have the faculties of awareness and being. If somebody never spends a moment of their lives while in the body strengthening those higher faculties, then when the body dies, it is tantamount to non-being.
Yeah. Right. Okay.
And Jeannie and I just happened to come across an interesting video last night, which I am getting ready to send you a copy of. And Jeannie, I'll send it to you as well so that you can put it in the notes today. Well, this is a YouTube video.
Oh, okay.
That I'll send you a link to, and as I say, I'll send it to Jeannie as well. And it's just a really powerful look at exactly what it is that we're talking about here. So,
great, good. And may I send it on to my cousins if it's appropriate?
Yeah, I mean, send it on to the world.
Okay.
Every mind, heart, and being on the planet. That's what we're here for. And this isn't something I created. This is just something we happened to come across and watch last night. It was really very powerful, very profound. And it's basically a woman starts out who talks about how she was so riddled with cancer, the doctors just said, you know, you're done. That's it. Too bad. It's over. Blah, 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 blah. And she goes into her supposed death and gets an explanation as to what the whole game is about. And she's sitting there perfectly healthy talking to you after being so riddled with cancer that they can't do anything for her. That's the first person who speaks in it. And the second one, and she just gives us the whole story, pardon me, about the near-life experience. So I think you'll find this inspiring and useful.
Thanks.
And I'll put it in the notes, or I'll put give it to Jeannie, so Jeannie can put it in the notes, and anybody and everybody will have access to it.
Thank you. Good.
So it should be in your inbox, Jeannie, and you too as well, Susan.
Thank you.
I think you'll find it interesting.
Yep, just got it. Thanks. Whoa. All right.
Cool. I think you'll really enjoy that. I know Jeannie and I watched it last night, and it was very powerful.
You know, I think of you guys often because you recommended Call the Midwife, and I am now in season 8, and I know it's winding up soon. And what being in this disturbed state that I've been in with my cousins, I'm a little more fragile about watching these shows, which although the underlying feeling and philosophy and everything about it is respect and love and honoring of everyone, no matter what, the traumas that people go through are pretty heavy. And sometimes I'm wondering if it isn't very healthy to be watching these right now. But
well,
I'm kind of
my offering is, well, here's the point to me. You know, I can remember the first time, and you've heard me explain this before, the first time I was guided to go to a violent movie. And I was at a point in doing my work where it's like, I don't need that in my field. I'm not going to go watch that. And I had the guidance to go and see, and, you know, we could look at what year this movie came out. It's 20 or more years ago. The movie's called The Island.
Mm-hmm.
And I know it's a violent movie. I'm guided to go to it, and I say to myself, I'm not doing that. And the internal guidance is, go. It's like, no, go. I'm not putting that in my field. Go. Okay, I'll go. So I sit in the movie, and the opening scene is a boat somewhere in the Bahamas or in the island somewhere, and somebody crawls up on the back of the boat and graphically hacks off somebody's leg. And I'm sitting there, it's like, what the hell am I doing here? I don't want this in my field. And the response came back, Michael, you have a belief in a world of bodies, and it's all a fraud. Sit here and breathe and do your work. You don't have to go out and manifest this in your life. You can sit here and let this be the catalyst for your forgiveness.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know.
So now I'll go to a violent movie and use it as a catalyst for me to do forgiveness work. So, and you know, one of the shows that we talked about in particular that Jeannie was really triggered by was the show where there was a baby lost, and it was a very traumatic experience, and Jeannie had lost two babies and totally buried that. And that night was, you know, all hell broke loose for Jeannie.
Mm-hmm.
And it led to, if you remember,
yeah,
if you remember some of the openings, and the you know, it was shortly after that that Jeannie got that thing about the five,
measures.
The five measures. And I mean, each of those five measures have opened since then. I mean, it was just a really phenomenal opening. And it's opened to and led to a whole new level of the presence of love in our home, the healing process for both of us. I mean, it's been a catalyst. It's been wonderful. It wasn't Dr. Feelgood when it came up.
I can imagine.
But, you know, that was the specific instruction I was given as I'm sitting watching this movie. It's like, well, you know, you could go ahead and manifest it because this is what's in your field, so you're going to be playing it out. Or you could wake up and let go of it and use this as a catalyst. So that would be my input, is breathe, do your work. You don't have to go out and manifest it to do the work that needs to be done.
Mm-hmm. While you were talking, I looked up Eckhart Tolle's pain body, and he says it's not the pain body but the identification with it that causes the suffering that you inflict on yourself and others. Our pain body reactions are... Huh?
Getting lost in it.
Yes. Our pain body reactions are doorways of transformation. It's possible to begin to identify the triggers that set off your pain body. This, in fact, is the most important work that you can do. And that's what he said on his site about it. Yep.
Wow. So the reactions are doors into, what did you say, Jeannie?
Doorways of transformation.
Oh, way. Yeah, okay.
Now, that's not the pain body, but our pain body reactions are the doorway to transformation.
I'm going to tell that to my cousin because I said, I know Michael has said something about this, and I think what it is that those are just thought disorders in a big pile maybe, and each one can be forgiven using the tools. That's what I told her. But I love this.
Send her a link to this show. Send her a link to the conversation.
I have been doing that, Michael. To this particular conversation, whoa, okay. She has, you know, she was part of, the older sister was part of the Zoom group for a while and has dropped out. And she may be a speaker on Dr. Tim's show. She is a mime and a ballet dancer, but the philosophy behind it is like what you're doing. It's like there are so many roads that lead to the truth. And her husband, late husband, was a massively successful mime who had all kinds of understandings about motives. And he did his work in his own way. He invented his work, the solutions to the work he needed to do. Was an amazing man. And I was telling Dr. Tim about him, and I sent Dr. Tim their book. They published a book together. So in any case, we may hear from her some more, but thanks. This is great.
I emailed you that link to what he says there too.
Thanks, Jeannie. Boy, you're so fast, man. Yeah. Well,
Michael, I can hear you talking through the wall, but you must be muted.
I was just saying that we're down to the last minute or so, so I'm going to say we'll be holding the space, young lady, and if any more conversation would be supportive, let's carry it on tomorrow.
Okay, thank you. Thanks so much.
We appreciate
Always.
You. Cherish you, my friend. All right, lots of love. Everybody, have the best year yet of your eternal life. It's an awesome gift to give the world. Blessings.
Thank you for listening to Mind Shifters Radio with Dr. Michael Rice and myself, Jeannie Rice, and Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Pichet, as we present the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We are here for 2 hours every Monday through Friday from 12 noon to 2 o'clock Eastern Time on Mind Shifters Radio. For more information on Aramaic forgiveness, please visit www.whyagain.org. That's www.whyagain.org.